Hello, and thanks for joining us again at Once When I Was Cool, a podcast of the opposite side of awesomeness, really. It's the podcast that you come to when you're feeling a little bit overwhelmed and you'd like to feel a little bit less whelmed, if that's the word I'm looking for. Looking for some underwhelmedness, welcome to the show. My name's Dave, and in a freak sort of last-minute opportunity, I guess we'd say, we and I have managed to be in the same place in the Pineapple Studios here in Hobart. So we welcome to the welcome back to the studio, mate.
Yeah, mate. It's been a while, and yes, it was a bit of an opportune visit. So I thought let's bust one out while we're down here.
Yeah, and we've really done it off the cuff. So for this episode, I guess we're really underprepared and.
Are we ever prepared?
Well, I try to be a little bit prepared, but I guess in this episode we've just made the effort to
get the stuff together and let's record.
Yeah, let's go. We've got a topic. We'll see how we go from there.
So there is a special reason I'm down here because one of my one of my boys, they're off to Antarctica for the next 14 months as a plumber.
Yeah, going into the trades, he got in there fairly young, didn't he? Went from high school. Did he finish high school?
Yep, finished grade 12, straight into his apprenticeship. But he was, you know, doing some of that stuff beforehand. So,
Yeah, he's always had a little bit out there. He's just 30 now, so he's been in there for a while.
Yeah, just 30. He's been teaching his trade back at TAFE, which is like a community-based college.
Community college or a skills-based college.
Trade college.
So I guess the topic that came up today that we think about is, and we're going to look at the changes because, of course, these things still exist and probably more prevalent now than they've ever been before. But once when I was cool, we used to have tradies or tradesmen, as you prefer to call it. I think in the US, for our northern counterparts, they call them contractors.
Correct, yes. So we have had them, still have them. Very important, keep industry going. They keep building everyone's country, really. So,
yeah.
I suppose there's lots of different trades.
And I guess when we talk about trades, we're talking about the skills-based trades that are more on-the-job training. Things like plumbers, electricians, auto electricians, mechanics.
Tilers, cabinet makers, even in everything's niched now too. So even in those industry, it's become niche. Like I suppose it has in our industry as well. All industry.
The funniest one that I had, and your boy is a plumber, as you mentioned earlier on. But one of the strangest ones I heard of was now called a clean plumber, where they don't come along and do. Fix your toilet if your toilet's broken or, you know, unblock drains and things like that. They only do the new installs on new houses and new buildings and things like that. They don't actually do the dirty work.
No, and, I think that's sort of reflective of, and without getting too political, I think it's part and parcel of, one, it becoming niche work again, and two, there's people don't want to get dirty. They want the job. They want the compensatory bits that come with it. And it depends on where you work. And people go, it's not much money in, say plumbing, but it depends. If the need's there, the price is there.
Well, exactly. And it's actually now you'll find that doing a trade or becoming a tradesman is, you know, guaranteed income. Similar to when we were nurses at university, when I went through university, you'd come out, you were guaranteed a job. Not necessarily the same these days, but certainly with the trades, you can come out and you can and certainly earn a decent wage.
It's just depends on what's going on. It's a needs and wants, and at the moment, especially with the dreaded bug that's been around for the last couple of years, which really killed a lot of industry and a lot of trades.
Yep.
People are coming back into it. There's so much infrastructure now being rebuilt that people can pick and choose and go and do niche stuff and go, no, I want to be a clean plumber and, do those initial fit-outs and laying pipe.
Well, up until we saw the economy go back to the toilet, there was a lot of building going on. It was easily a 2 to 3 year wait just to get somebody to build your house. A lot of those businesses have since folded now as we see costs and everything go up. But it's interesting just the amount of different trades that are now available, because I remember when I was at school, it wasn't easy to get an apprenticeship. Not that it's any easier
it's
now,
very
but,
difficult.
You know, the strong push was go to university or go to higher learning, whereas the guys that went and, did trade seemed to have a little bit more trouble getting there and more sorts of difficulty finding a spot.
I think the biggest thing is getting into those trades, you either had to know somebody or be part of the family or related to the family. I think it was very hard to get into it if you weren't, and especially in the country towns where we were, because there was only a handful of, there was, just thinking off the top of my head, one, two, three, four sort of automotive places, and then a few sort of smaller ones which didn't really have apprentices and things like that. But builders, it was, you were probably a family friend.
Yeah.
And that's how you got into it.
Well, it's interesting when you talk about the automotive trades. My mother, Ruby, I remember when I said I wanted to go to university, be a nurse, she said, why don't you become a mechanic?
Oh,
that seemed to be that seemed to be more of a thing that she thought. And she thought, you know, and look, fair enough, But
if anyone who knows you, they'd be laughing like I'm laughing at you.
I'm not good with those sorts of things. I'm not very mechanically minded. But my mum believed in me no matter what.
Oh, I believe in you too, mate. What do we all keep saying to you? You can't really break anything these days. Nothing you can rebuy anyway.
But it's interesting that the mechanics these days, especially ones that go to the new car dealerships, they're all more in the way of changing the oil and putting it on a computer to see what's wrong. They don't actually get into the nuts and bolts and the guts of what it means to be a mechanic, where back in our day, it was, small engine repair and all these types of things that led to bigger engine repairs.
You had to be a bit more, again, that's another industry that's gone niche. You know, they've got the ABD2 plugs where they just put them into the car and diagnose if there's an issue. Aside from that, you usually go and do your servicing, and if you keep your car regularly serviced, it should run fine. And, I know I've got an imported vehicle, and I know I have to pay $1,500 Australian a year for a service, and anything outside of what's in that service I've got to pay for. Now, I know most people are going, oh yeah, well, that's what everyone does. The point being is that's just one service a year. That's without any of the big services in between. That's just the regular sort of service. And when I say regular services, that excludes things like timing belts at 100,000, that's kilometres, or, you know, 150,000, whatever they are these days, and it depends on the make and model. The biggest thing is the mechanics back in the day, you'd go into their workshops, they'd have a tractor in there, half pulled apart, a couple of lawn mowers, they'd have, two cars on the hoist and someone dropping in a four-wheel drive that looks like it should be nothing but a farm vehicle, and it was their daily runner. And, they'd get through them.
And then they'd be running a service station out the front, filling up with fuel and doing all those types of things.
Correct.
Checking your oil, checking your fluids and those types of things as well.
Correct. And, running a spare parts, small engine spare parts, all those sorts of things. So, in these days you do have small engine repairers, you have diesel mechanics, you have, people who will go, well, I can service up to this. You have to ask, if you go to somewhere new and it's not a major brand and you want a service done, you have to ask, can you service this type of vehicle here?
Yep.
Because sometimes I just go, we can't do that.
Well, I know that in particular because when I lived in Brisbane, lived up in Queensland, I have a Land Rover Defender, which is one of the old sorts of, bought it in 2009, and it's quite computerised as well, but it's nothing like the modern cars, certainly like your, the car you were just mentioning. But anywhere that I go, I can't just go to a general mechanic these days. I have to sort of go and find a Land Rover specialist because typical Land Rover, they're not just your run-of-the-mill thing. And fortunately, I found one guy in Tasmania who is absolutely amazing, but he's pretty much one of the only ones. There's not too many others around, and he's sort of the same age as me or maybe a bit older. And when he looks to retire, I'm in all sorts of trouble. So it's interesting that, the specialised mechanics, as specialised as they are, it's really interesting to see, you know, how difficult it is to actually find somebody. And fortunately, he's not a greedy person and he's got plenty of work. But, you know, there's lots of opportunity for them to hose you for more money if they wanted to, because there's not so many around.
It's, yeah. And what really jumps out to me compared to the mechanic, I'm not bashing mechanics, and I mean, we just got on mechanics, I'm sure we'll get on to other trades shortly, but a lot of the time when I was growing up, I had my cars, I'd do a lot of my own servicing. I'd change my oil, I'd change my oil filters, I'd change radiators, I'd drop different engines in, gearboxes out, diffs, blah blah blah, all of that sort of stuff. You go to these service centres now and the mechanics look pristine. They don't even look like the mechanics.
Or the floor of the mechanic is painted white and it still looks white.
And they're pristine, and you go, I, like I've said before, I've worked in a wrecking yard, but I also remember doing a work experience in one of my local mechanics, and, you know, even just going down and being a work experience student, I came out head to toe in grease.
Yep.
And that was just for fun.
Yeah.
I mean, so, you know, I look at it and go, you see these guys, the mechanics, all mechanics had that in-ground grease in them, and they, you know, you could smell them a mile off. They just smelt like a car repair shop.
Yep. And they would just get out there when they got out there, and they'd go for it until they were pretty much till they went when they had dinner and went to bed.
Yeah. So even, you know, so, and I suppose it's a bit like any trade, really. Like I said earlier, a lot of the places, even in, you know, where I'm at in Brisbane now, you know, any trade, you ring up, there's multiple, you don't ring up just for a plumber, you can ring up and you ring up a specific place and you tell them what you want. You want an electrician, a plumber, a builder, a repairman, and then, you know, but is it a fridge mechanic that you want, refrigeration mechanic, or is it a...
You know, and then you want a gas fitter. You don't want just a normal plumber. You need somebody who can do gas as well.
Or roofing or...
Or roofing plumbers. Yeah, that's another one as well. But tell me, what is the... I've never understood it, and I apologise to anybody out there, but what is it you have tradesmen who are builders? What is it that they do? Are they just the coordinator of the building process and get all the labourers in, or, you know?
It depends. Back in the day when we were younger, they were the people who actually had the nail, the hammer in the hand and the nail and nailing it. I think these days there's still a lot of that. Unfortunately, I think the individual builders, it's a lot different. I've got some friends that are individual builders, and they build some really quality, high-end stuff, and people...
But what stuff? What sort of stuff?
They build houses, they build units, they build...
But they don't do the concreting and the brickwork and the carpentry the electrical.
When they're the builder, they're the person who is the owner of the contract for that building, and then they subcontract out. So Tyler does tiling, a cement layer lays cement. You've got drywall or gyp rock, that's what we call it down in the southern.
Yeah,
you know,
and plasterboard. Yeah,
plasterboard, and gyp rock's a brand. I'm sorry about that, but you know, drywall as it is in the northern hemisphere.
Yep.
You know, electricians, they usually have their own, not their own team. Some companies have it all in themselves, but a lot of them are just subcontracted out. So they own the contract for that building, then they subcontract it out.
So they're more or less like a coordination of all the different trades.
Yeah, and they're usually, when you say the builder, they're usually someone who's the, you know, the cabinet maker, so who puts framing up and all that sort of stuff is where they come from, I suppose.
Yep. So, I mean, they get quite specialised. And then, you know, we've talked a lot about the, I guess the automotive trades and those. And then you get, you know, like air conditioner repairers as well. That's a different trade in
there
as well.
There's millions of trades.
But that must have been a relatively new thing, because I remember when we were kids, we never had cars with air conditioning.
It's when we've done this before, it was the window. And even then, you weren't allowed to put them down.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you did, you're in trouble, especially if it was in the back and it was that whoop, 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 whoop.
Well, you never had that back in those days because the seals weren't as good, that sort of hammering that usually happens. You know,
But when you got to that point and it did happen, you just left it there so it sounded like a helicopter. So your car sounded like a helicopter. Yeah. I still got the quarter panels in my Hilux, and I love the quarter panels because I don't even have to...
Oh, the little window thing at the front.
Little triangle window at the front. I don't know why they call them a quarter panel. They're about an eighth.
Yeah.
But the little quarter panels at the front, I love them.
Yep.
I love them. And Diesel loves it too when he's sitting in the front. Cause
Diesel being your dog.
My dog, yeah. Not my wife. Mm. But I open it and he sticks his nose out there. He just loves it. He thinks he's awesome.
So moving on from there, you know, you've got other sorts of trades as well. And thinking about your young bloke going to Antarctica and the trades and things they have down there, obviously they're going to have electricians and plumbers and everyone in between. You've also got things like cooks and chefs and I guess, you know, I apologise to any chefs out there. Well, no, I don't. But, you know, chefs are another trade in itself, probably one of the more poorly paid trades for the job you have to do. Chefs certainly don't make a lot of money, especially for the
high-end kind
of work
do.
They have to do. Yeah, but how many of them get to become high-end ones? Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not sure. There's probably less of them than there is builders. I get that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there are. But it's just, you know, I know a few people who are chefs and, you know, they don't get paid great money, especially for the hours they have and the split shifts and everything they have to do. But it's
like bakers.
But, yeah, bakers. And then you've got...
painters.
You know, pastry chefs as opposed to a baker.
A shoe chef.
Yeah. So it's interesting what it is that comes in underneath the trades as well, because then you go into the ones that were traditionally more the female ones, like the hairdressing ones, and then you'd have the it used to always be called secretarial school, where the where the girls would go off and learn to be a secretary.
But that's a trade. That's like a year's.
Yeah, it absolutely is. But it's interesting now that it's not. You know, when we did it, you know, when we left school, there was no way we would ever have considered. You know, we became nurses, which were at the time wasn't.
I don't know what you're saying.
Wasn't considered really manly either, but.
We were smart back in the day. We knew that we wouldn't be in the elements.
Yeah, well, there you go. So. It's interesting now that these trades have opened up and you don't have to just be female to get into them, particularly hairdressing. Now there's plenty of successful male hairdressers.
And the barbers. Barbering is a trade in itself.
Well,
now.
It used to be. And I, you know, a few years ago when I looked to come down to Tasmania, that was my end goal, was just to run a little barber shop out of my house or, you know, get a shop somewhere.
Yeah, and those lovely locks, I'm
sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, it's like trusting a skinny chef, trusting a, you know, bald barber. But I wasn't interested in, you know, doing the hair and the, you know, all the different sorts of things that that women usually tend to go towards. I just wanted to be a barber, you know, beard trims, buzz cuts, those types of things.
Yep.
And now you have to do, to become a barber, you have to do the full, you know, to get a proper qualification, you have to do the full hairdresser ride. You can't do barbering anymore.
No, so you can't just be the person who does the brooming on a Thursday evening or a Saturday morning, and
you could. They probably don't let you add anyone, but
you work your way up. That's you've seen. Don't mess with the Zohan.
Oh, okay. Is that your reference point?
No, that's not my
tradesman work.
No, that's not my reference point. But you'd see them the. They'd go through, but it used to be they'd go to TAFE.
Yeah.
They'd go to TAFE and they'd do it because, again, you know, when we were in high school in years 10, 11 and 12, we could do...
Yeah, so senior school.
The senior school,
friends, yeah.
You could do a trade base, which was every Wednesday. You'd get to go down to the TAFE, and the nearest TAFE for us was down in Warwick, so it was a bus trip.
Yeah.
50 minutes down and 50 minutes back.
Did you do one?
Yeah.
What did you do?
Auto.
Oh, okay.
So, because I loved lots of cars, as I still do now. I still get out and play with the cars. I love it.
Yeah.
But...
not your expensive one, though.
No. I honestly, I don't even think I've lifted the bonnet on it, because there's no point. Oh, I lied. I wanted to have a look at how big the turbo was.
Did you get it out, compare it to your hairdryer?
Mate, I think my hairdryer was bigger. I was very disappointed when I saw it. It's like a snail.
Yeah, there you go.
So, well, and then I just had a look to make sure I could see where, because everything under there now for a dipstick or anything that's important that you need to look at is yellow.
Yeah.
So the tradesman can look at it and go, oh, yeah, they've got to pull that out and check it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Pull it out. I don't even know if they have the rags now. I remember that when one of the new Land Rover Discoveries came out, my father-in-law, who's now since passed, he was outraged that it didn't even have a dipstick. You'd put it on to the machine and it would run an analysis of the oil in the sump, and it would then figure it out. And it had no drain plug at the bottom. You had to have a special tool, which then was a suction attached, that would vacuum it out, and then they could put new oil in.
That's monopolizing. That's actually smart.
Is it? Well, is it? It's, well, yeah. It's clever and it's technological, but it, you know, it doesn't make it easy for your home checker.
No, it doesn't. But what they've done is they've marketed a niche product and gone, well, if other people want to do this, they're going to have to pay, you know.
Buy the machine.
And, you know, I can tell you now that Dirk had to have his timing chain. It's, you know, the minute I landed down here, I got that message about needing to help pay for that. But our mechanic, who is the most awesome mechanic ever, he just said, it's not worth me doing it. It'll be too expensive. You need to take it back to the manufacturer. He went and found somebody else who was about $1,000 cheaper, but has been sitting there for about 6 weeks now. He went to pick it up because they said it was ready and was still on the hoist. So what's that telling you? So I'm looking forward to this.
Mm.
So, but my mechanic just went, nah. One, I need probably more hands than I've got in my own mum and dad shop. Mm. You know what I mean? Because to pull an engine out in a gearbox and then to strip one down, you just cutting your ability to do those quick turnovers. And that's, again, where people have gone into niche markets.
Mm.
You know, and you, a lot of them just go, no, we don't service a gearbox. You have to take it to a gearbox specialist. We don't do the heads. You have to send it to a head specialist. We don't do the brakes. We have to get them machined elsewhere.
Yeah. It's interesting, though, when you come to a place like Tasmania where there are less people, less tradesmen, less businesses because it's such a smaller population. It's interesting, though, the reliability sometimes can be a little bit left wanting of a tradesman. So you want somebody to come and fix something up for you. They tell you that they're going to be there and then they just don't turn up, or they don't return your phone calls, or they, you know, if the job's not big enough for them, or they got too much work on that week, or they want to go fishing or diving or something like that, they just don't show up. And their business doesn't seem to suffer.
No, because it's just a needs versus, it's, what is it? It's service and demand, it's wants and demands. That's why it's probably you got pros and cons. But anyway, the other thing is tradies back in the day, compared to now, they're all got, and I know we've talked about this, but high vis is everywhere. It's amazing. Back in the day, it was a pair of stubby shorts and a t-shirt and a pair of Blundstone boots, steel cap Blundstone boots.
If you were lucky, or Dunlop Volleys.
Dunlop Volleys, and then they became steel cap.
Tennis shoes. Yeah. And now they're all coloured and got all sorts of things going on.
Yeah. So compared to now, they look like butterflies on.
Well, it's interesting, though, because if the regulator comes past and sees you, they can just drive past on a work and see you on a work site, and if they think something's up, they can walk in and just start looking around. They don't even have to have a warrant or, you know, show cause or anything like that. The regulator over here actually has a lot more powers than the police in that sort of situation.
Wow, I didn't even know that.
Yep. If they think something's wrong, where they come past and they see someone on a roof without a harness, or if they see work without the signs being up there, they've got every legal right to walk on, because it's all in the name of safety.
Wow. Well, there you go. And I suppose, talking of that, and safety's paramount, don't get me wrong, hasn't scaffolding come into its own? And fencing.
I don't know. Why is that?
Because you never used to have to put a fence around anything. You just, people just wouldn't walk to where people were working. It's common sense, and people would just go, oh, I'm not walking there. There's people. Yeah. doing construction.
But we have to protect people from their own stupidity as well. That's the issue, is that when society embraces mediocrity in the way it is, and now you've got me going.
Yeah, I know.
You know, we accept stupidity and we actually embrace it, because we don't discourage it anyway. We just let people do stupid things, and then but it's the fault of
selection.
The person.
Natural
doesn't work.
I know,
doesn't
but work natural anymore. Selection should be a thing, and I think that's where we've gone. It's like, I think the pretty colours that everyone wears on a job site, I think it's more about, you know, trapping in the idiots in terms of, it's like moths to a flame sometimes, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know what it's like in the industry we're in. We have so many safety mechanisms and triggers and safety that people don't fail anymore, because there's so many other things there that somebody else will pick it up and systems in place to stop you.
Now you're going to get me started.
Well, don't get me wrong again. Yet again, you know, for the sake of the people, other people there, you know, no, people shouldn't have to pay for other people's stupidity, but it does happen that way.
It does. And I think what happens is, and where I get a bit disheartened, is that when people do stupid things and there's bad outcomes, they want to close down work sites and jump up and down. And you go, well, if that person wasn't out on that ledge, like they were told, and that you do inductions, you do all that sort of stuff.
Well, we talked about safety in a recent episode, so we won't get too much into that. But it comes back to the guy, the bloke sitting having their lunch on a girder hanging a couple of hundred feet above the ground. You'll never see that again. And apart from anything else, the work site now has to be peanut free or something like that anyway.
You don't want to bring an allergen to work. Again, I still think that is natural selection at its finest, and we should embrace that. And you know we don't, and we won't get into the pros and cons of mediocrity.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know what the pros are, but there's plenty of cons.
Well, there seem to be plenty of pros, because plenty of people love it. Anyway, not for me to judge, apparently, allegedly.
Oh, look, I think we need to do a whole episode on it.
A whole new one that's explicit lyrics and yes.
Yes, anyway. And we'll talk about, you know, being able to actually ride your bike without a helmet.
Mm. Well, back in those days when you could, we should have brought that up in the safety one.
Yeah, I know. Right?
Mm. So, yes. Tradesmen.
Tradesmen. So the biggest thing that I also noticed is...
they all drive utes these days.
They're all got these massive utes.
And they drive like menacing troublemakers.
So, you know, we put people into... Not, when I say we, not just you and I, and not we, just as in we as in me. You know, we put people into little boxes, and we say that... you know, this person is this person is that. I look at the tradies, and again, my son's a tradie, but I look at them and go, they're worse at times than the peopladers or people who are just learning to drive. And I think they do it on, and they drive angry. If you do something wrong, they get extremely angry to the point where they want to take their electric drill and put it through your eye. Whereas if they do something wrong, it's perfectly okay, and they get angry and want to put two drills through your eyes, because how dare you confront them.
Well, it's not wrong in their mind. That's the thing. Nobody deliberately does things wrong, does things that they think is wrong. But, yeah, I understand what you mean. They are certainly the ones, by and large, that I see will try and cause the road rage. If there is road rage, they'll, you know.
They'll be involved.
Yeah.
Every road rage film clip you see on the 6 o'clock news over here, there's a tradie involved.
Yeah.
So, and again, I'm not bashing tradies. I've got one.
And these are, like we said, it's just a one-off case of there's many, many tradies out there, and there's some good ones.
Mm.
But I used to get annoyed that any of the tradies that I got would always come in and do the big alpha male flex.
With the ILSs.
What?
Invisible lat syndrome.
No, they would come and do the whole, you know, if you ask them a question about what they were doing or what it was that needed to be done, they treat you like you're a complete idiot. Like, oh, what, you don't know how to do that? Oh, well, why wouldn't you know how to do that? The specialised job that they do all the time. And I always had to resist the urge to say, You know, well, come and try and do what I do, because that's usually lost on people when you try to do that anyway.
Oh,
but admittedly, I have not found that in the latest generation. It's been a good 10, 12 years since I've had a tradie try and flex it out on me just to make me feel
like
it's
more. Is that at home, or if they come out to your place to do many of the jobs that they need to do out here?
Yeah. Well, not so much here. It was when I was in Queensland, they'd come, you know, you'd come in and say, oh, I need this done, this done. Oh, I would have thought you could have done that yourself. Oh, do you not know how to do that?
No. Yeah.
That sort of
thing.
So
that belittling thing where you go...
Yeah, yeah. The alpha.
Yeah. And just then ask them... That's where you should be able to ask them the question around something in our line of work.
But it doesn't come up and it'll be lost on them.
It'll be lost on them, and it's you just trying to be outsmart. You think you're better than me because you went to university. You get that a lot.
Oh, I don't know. I don't ever give them the... I don't ever tell them what I do.
No. No, but if you get into that argument, or you see them at work when they're arguing with you. What I love is when they come around and they start doing things, not realising you're actually dealing with humans.
And
they start lifting tiles out and things like that and going, you can't actually be in that room. That person's got Ebola.
Yes, that person has tuberculosis.
Of his Ebola.
Yes.
So, yeah, anyway, tradies.
I thought that would have been your opportunity to bring back polio. You haven't had that for a good year or so.
I know. I'm trying to bring in some other rare diseases.
Hey, speaking of which, in the last year or so, I just was looking at the figures earlier on today, but this is now our second best year, considering we didn't publish for half the year and we didn't do anything last year. This is our second best downloaded year. So thank you very much to everyone that's listened. Thanks for telling a friend. Thanks for being out there. And, thanks for your support.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Thank you. And we had good reasons for not doing what we did. But my question is, the other thing too is people now are just ripping tradies off left, right and centre in terms of their equipment. They're stealing their work vans and because they've got all the equipment in the back.
That's absolutely atrocious. You know, tools aren't cheap to buy. And, you know, they're getting more or less getting punished for buying good quality gear. And probably the only thing I hate more than a junkie is a thief, because it's just appalling that people would do that. And no matter what you think of somebody, they've worked hard to get those tools, they've worked hard to get their job, and they should be able to leave them in the back of their car or leave them locked up in the back of their car, in the boxes and everything like that. And it's amazing. I was really astounded to know just the stuff that people will steal. Especially, you know, the specialised stuff, like particular places, not something that you just use around home or anything like that.
So going back to when we were younger, the tradies used to leave their stuff in the back of their open tray and no one would touch it, because you realised that you just didn't need to touch anything that belonged to somebody else.
Or leave them on the work site overnight as
well. Oh, yeah, that never happened. Or if they do, have you seen the big boxes they put them in now? They've got massive big steel chests, and a lot of them are bolted down to the ground. They have to bring their tools at the beginning of a job. They leave them there.
Yeah.
And then a lot of them will pick them up at the end of their job and just leave them there locked up in these big bins.
Yeah, and stealing them from people's houses as well, going onto their property at certain times of night and then stealing it as well.
I had a tradie who was a builder out where I was a young fella, and they just drove onto his property, and because he was a builder and they all had those trailers back then because they didn't carry the big boxes on the back like they do now.
Yeah.
Took his trailer up and took it away, and then, you know, they found it eventually, but everything was taken out of it.
Yeah, of course it was, and it'd all be knackered anyway. We still have down here a lot of tradies that have a trailer as well.
Oh, yeah, we do, but they tend to usually have a backhoe on the back of them.
No, these, especially builders that I've seen, they will have a set-up trailer in the back of their ute as well. That's like a mini workshop in itself, so it's got all these charging points because all the tools are now battery-powered. They have the charging stations and the 12-volt set up so that they can go and recharge the batteries and do everything they need to do.
And that's now when they're stealing the trucks. It's not just the tools, it's the setup that they have to put into it. And a lot of them spend a lot of money, and they're lucky to last them because of the type of work they do.
And they get high use.
And so not only are they getting their equipment stolen, they then can't go to work because it's not only the it's like anyone that they steal their vehicle, but it doesn't stop us going to work. If when I had my car stolen, it didn't stop me going to work.
Yeah, that's
I still
exactly
got to
right.
go to work and earn my living. These guys, they can't get to work, or they have to fork out a ton of money again because a lot of it's not covered on insurance.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly right. And a lot of insurance companies won't take it. So, you know, I think it's appalling, you know, as little as you might like somebody to take away their, at least they're working. That's the other thing. You know, they're out there working, trying to make a living. And, you know, some are dodgy, but the majority of them are trying to do a good job. It's just, it just sucks that people will steal that and they can't get anything back for it.
Yeah, it is pretty poor. So one of the other trades, I suppose, is we did briefly touch it, was bakers. And I don't know how
often... What happened just then? Did you have to burp or something? Is that what the big gap was?
No, I just had to think.
Oh, okay. All right. Looked like you sort of swallowed hard and then sort of your eyeballs were a bit funny.
No, I just was thinking about what I was going to say, and I can't do two things at once being a dude, you know that. So now I've lost my thought. Oh, bakers. So.
Did I ever tell you my story of the bakers? I was talking to a guy when I was working. It was a guy from Northern Ireland who'd come over on a nursing working holiday. He was a really good guy, really liked him, could drink like nothing else. And he was a good
Irish fella. Drink. No. Yeah.
And Northern Irish.
Stereotypes.
Northern Irish. And he had this really thick Northern Irish accent. And we were talking, said something about bakers and going to the bakery or something like that. And he started into this story about how he got into trouble with a whole pack of bakers. And he said, I was getting in trouble with all these bakers and they were really threatening and they come up and do this. And I said, bakers? He said, no, bakers. And I said, what? What are you talking about? He said, bakers, like on a motorbike. That was his accent. He was actually saying bikers. And I didn't know what he was talking about. Well, how can you upset a baker that much that he wants to come and kill you, especially in Northern Ireland? And he was talking about, no, bikers. And I, yeah, it was. Yeah. I tell it better than that, but it's late at night.
My whole thing is with that, and I'm just trying to unpack that a little, is what do you actually think? They've strung a couple of sausage rolls together as nunchucks or something?
No, hit him with a baguette.
Oh, a baguette. So I was just going to say, do you...
With a few baps. When you're ready.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, you don't see that as a trade as much around anymore. A lot of places like Woolworths or, you know, those big chain stores, they do everything in-house. Are they still coming in at 3 a.m. and doing it? A lot of...
2 o'clock. I think anyone that can start work at 2 o'clock deserves more money.
Yeah. I have had it, I reckon, too. But... your mum and dad bakers, it's hard to find a baker anymore, like on the street corners like we used to have. You know, you don't see advertisements, can be a baker at Baker's Delight.
Well, sometimes you do. You do see the ads for them, especially because Delilah's
been... Maybe I'm not looking.
Well, you're probably not reading the ads for the trades, but there's lots of bakers and those bigger sorts of bakeries have got ads for people to come along because, yet again, the kids these days don't want to get up at that time of the day to go and make
bread still, for
that's
people. When they're getting up to go out.
Well, I don't know about that. But, they don't want to be held accountable. They want to be able to sleep in and, you know, get up in the morning and make 120 grand a year for not having done any work. And, you know, anyway,
that's a whole other podcast there. Anyway, tradies. So, tradies back in the day versus tradies now.
I think it's more diverse these days. Back in those days, they used to just do a bit of everything and always... And the main thing was they
multi-skilled.
Always knew somebody. If they couldn't get it right, they knew somebody who they'd could come fix it up. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They'd call a mate and get them over.
Yeah, and I think with insurances, with theft and everything else, plus the inevitable speeding tickets that they have to pay, the costs of everything have gone up ridiculously. And the quality of the materials they can get these days. You look at the frame of a house these days, it's never hardwood, it's always pine. If you're lucky, it might be treated pine, but even then it's fairly rare, and that's still as expensive as anything.
Well, we were having a conversation today about, at your place when we were walking around the property, and...
around the estate.
Oh, sorry, the estate, because, you know, we're in the lodge at the moment.
Dodging all the dog poo.
Yeah. So, like you were saying, you had a shed put out there, out the back, and, mm-hmm. you know, a three-car space shed. But going back to where we were talking earlier and we were saying how different trades do different things, you were saying how the slab... In the difference between the 10 months mm-hmm. from when you were first were speaking to them out and getting the bits and pieces and before the plan, increased by nearly double.
Yep.
By the time it actually got laid, because the cost, their cost went up.
Yep. It's got to get passed on.
So it's got to get passed on. So even if you budget for X amount of dollars, and it's like when you see those, what's that building show on ABC where they do those amazing homes, amazing builds?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. You know, you look at them and you always go, how can none of these? No one comes in under budget.
No.
Or on budget. Or on time. You know, it's 3 years down the track and it's cost them an extra £150,000.
Yep.
And you go, oh my God, it looks great, but how can you come up? Because to come up with an extra, well, that's 300,000 Australian or 280,000 Australian.
Yep.
You know, where are you going to pull that out of if you've already extended yourself? Yep. I don't know how that actually works.
Yeah, and that was fortunate that we did, you know, because I ended up asking for X amount because that was a quote I got from the shed company, and it was over double by the time I finished it, put power in, put plumbing in, followed all the council regulations and everything else. We had remortgaged and I managed to get money out of that mortgage. Otherwise, I'd have been very short of what I needed to finish that.
You would just be a skeleton out there with no iron on
it. No, the iron would be rusting because of my tears.
But it's like anything, and I think that's where a lot of people are losing out. And, you know, everyone's got the housing shortages around the world, but I think that's where everyone's losing out because they start to actually – they might be able to get in, and by the time everything goes through, you know, everyone's trying to scrimp and scrape and get, you know, an extra $50,000 or $100,000 together to be able to finish it. Or they've got, you know, toilet paper on the windows for curtains.
Mm. Mm.
You know,
dual use.
Yeah. You know, which one's been used, you know, where the bathroom is at least.
Yeah.
Anyway, trades.
Yeah, what are your thoughts?
Trades, very niche, like everything these days is niche.
And still very necessary though.
Oh, absolutely necessary.
One of those
necessary.
Things that can't be automated, cannot, can't be.
No. Probably automated in terms of getting the raw materials, yes, and that always has been.
Not a hairdresser.
No.
Well, mine could.
Yours is automated. It's a buzz cut.
Ish.
Yes. So, yes, very niche. I think it's even going to become more niche. You will have to go to one trade and then go to somewhere else if you want something else. If you need tyre suspension work and your engine service, you have to go to three different people. And if there's a gearbox issue, you have to go to a fourth one.
Well, that's like getting your tyres, even getting them aligned and you've got a problem, maybe a mechanical thing or a steering issue. You can go and get them aligned at the tyre place and then you go to a mechanic that hopefully specialises in front end to be able to move all that stuff around.
Suspension and all of that, yeah. So, yeah, very necessary, makes the world go round, very niche. My second son, I hope he has a great year. And
yeah, because he won't listen.
Yeah, because just ask my wife.
But a year in Antarctica would be a fabulous experience.
It'd be great on the resume too.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You can unblock a toilet down there in that cold, negative 40.
Or dig a slab in the frozen tundra.
Yes. So, Dave, I think we'll wrap that up.
I think we've exhausted it and we loosely talked about tradies in there somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you for listening. If you've made it this far, oncewascoolpodcast@gmail.com. If you want to send us an email or anything, anyone out there, anyone that's listening.
Hey, Shaniqua.
But, yeah, thank you. Thanks again for making it a great year. We've still got a couple of months left. We're in October, beginning of October at the moment.
Yep.
We'll have to start thinking about doing a Christmas episode soon. We haven't done one
Christmas
of them for
special.
A while. Yeah. We'll do something on why we're killing Santa or something like that.
Are we allowed to say Santa Claus? Or are we allowed to actually have a denomination anymore?
It's our show. We do what we like.
Fine. Yes. We will. We'll have Satan Claus.
All right. Well, we thank you for that. I guess we're going to move out now. And, thank you very much. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
We sucks.